In terms of are the resources needed to make the world a better place more likely to be found among people taking a scientific approach or a spiritual approach, the answer was science, 3 points, spiritual, 3 points. So we got equality there. So everyone had different, very different opinions, but the consensus was that it seemed to be necessary to be quite balanced in all of this. Then we got into our sort of general, our own discussion and our own opinions, okay, on this. And it was made quite strongly by some individuals with a scientific orientation that it was fundamental to get the facts known, get the resources out in order to be able to get those facts known, but it's also important to distribute the information to the general public. And there was a big, important role of the NGOs and the civil society, and the churches also have a role to play, and that we perhaps should consider this event as an example of an attempt to try and do that. Of course, there was recognition that many of the issues that we have today are dealt through the political process, and that politicians need to be pushed to make the right decisions. And we feel that, being based in Switzerland, that possibly the referendum could be a good way of making public ideas known and decisions made. We had a recent case in Ireland which was not related to the environment, but demonstrated the power of the population in making social change. One aspect, however, was brought up was that there's a great asymmetry in this information that we're talking about, that we have powerful lobbies, industries, who want to keep the information to themselves and who want to use it, the information, to manipulate it for their own benefits or for the benefits of their shareholders. So we've got here, in some sense, the counteracting role of the church, which can help disseminate an alternative vision of the facts. An example was given of slavery. If it had not been for religious people, then maybe little would have changed in 18th century England to make slavery to be banned in Britain and the British Empire. So we've got here examples from the past which demonstrated that action by the church is possible and has been successful. In the end, what it boils down to is that we think that at the heart of this is the human nature as the problem, and that we have become so used to being members of a consumer society, we need to rethink our roles as consumers and maybe have a different role as citizens in a modern world. But we do have a technological solution to the whole problem. We've been assured by one of our members that CERN will provide every home with a little black hole in order to be able to consume all of the waste and to produce infinite amount of energy. So we just have to wait for that to be produced by industry, and all problems will be solved. Thank you.
Well, puts everything in context, and perhaps it's a summary of the divergence we have. Black holes or not black holes, there are scientific solutions that may help us, but we're still faced with the fact that we all tend to be greedy and selfish by nature, and we want more of the world's resources for ourselves, and some way or how or other, as you're saying, we need to work both of those things in together. Mark, as you're sitting dangerously close to me, can I ask you to come up now and give us your summary?
Okay, so yeah, we had a very interesting discussion, and surprisingly, we more or less came to a kind of a consensus, at least on the first question about what you found surprising or helpful, sort of like what happened, what Eric had also mentioned, was that nothing was too surprising, okay? But many of the issues we discussed, it ended up that we were actually feeling a bit of pessimism, in fact, in some ways, because a large part of the discussion of the four panelists, of course, were talking about many of the problems, and it seems like a lot of the things were very difficult to solve some of the issues like injustice, which Alec had mentioned, as well, and also the business interest, the commercial interests, and so forth seems to be so powerful. One of us had mentioned about one French interest that was dealing with increasing the use of palm oil, for example, and others as well. So and another person had mentioned that the WWF, which is a wonderful organization, that organization would be working on something that like an almost impossible mission, something like that. So there was a little bit of a pessimism, and so it would be maybe afterwards to talk a little bit more about potential positive, optimistic solutions that might be possible among the panelists. And so for the four outlooks, we all agreed that it was very, very difficult to choose. One of the things that we all agreed on, that all the four outlooks were definitely all related, and that they all kind of add to each other. So in a way, it was very difficult to choose one. But two comments that came out. One was the inequality issue. That would be one that would be, let's say, might have a little edge. And another one, which I kind of like, of course, which expressed a little bit of optimism, is Arthur's engineering, potential for finding or at least working on a solution. So that was something that which came from a younger member of our group, which is good because it expresses a lot of optimism. I think that we might be able to work on an engineering type of solution. The resources needed to make a world a better place, are they more likely to come from a scientific approach or a spiritual approach? And the conversation was more or less started off with it, that it would be a spiritual approach is quite likely, let's say, a starting basis for bringing about some kind of change. But in the end, we all kind of agreed that really it has to be among just individuals, something that comes from inside of each individual. So, okay, it's related to a spiritual approach, but it's actually some individual change where we can build within the Christian community. And so, the effect of, let's say, of people of faith may not be this, let's say, the same as a large scientific organizations like within the UN, but at least among our community, of course, if we can convince or let's say spread this kind of message among our community, it might have a larger effect. One thing I also thought about as well, which is something that hasn't really been discussed, because it touches a science and faith issue, is that right now at this stage, the balance of power, you might say, and on the debate over climate change, is held by one particular country, which is the United States, and the people in power who are, let's say, denying it are largely actually from the Christian community, who are among the senators that are involved. And so that's a kind of an issue that we might, I think, it's a question that would be nice for also to be addressed as well. So that's one of the questions that we also discussed.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to come back to get some responses from these good people here in case you need to know that. But first, David, would you just come and share with us what went on in your group? Sitting safely at the faraway end there.
Yes, a cunning plan. Well, we too had a very spirited discussion in our group, probably the most lively discussion that we've had over the four sessions. like the previous two groups and the reports from the previous two groups, we felt that there were no surprises, really, from what we heard from the panelists in terms of the problems that were identified. But there's certainly acknowledgement that there is a difficulty in coming up with solutions to some of these really big problems that were being put on the table. Need to change human nature, that was identified as clearly a core problem. But one of our group mentioned that this would be more difficult than changing the climate. So there was a certain amount of scepticism that might be possible. We were also challenged in our group to perhaps be a little bit more radical, it would have been great to have some more radical views, particularly from the theologians in terms of what might be done to have some solutions. But on the other hand, we were also reminded that the human race perhaps needs to be a bit more, have a bit more humility. And perhaps if that was really embedded in our everyday actions as both individuals, churches and societies, that might help us address some of the problems. We were reminded of the Beatitudes, that blessed are the meek, that this is again something that perhaps we need to pay more attention to and accept that there are perhaps opportunities for more dialogue between the different communities, between the scientists and the theologians, and perhaps there has been in the past, and that's something that we should perhaps try and encourage through this type of discussion. We did like the idea, the panelists did like the idea about the knowledge that some of the old communities have about how they might live in harmony with the earth, and some of the indigenous communities, for example. And again, coming back to this idea of humility, perhaps we as a modern day community have sort of lost the respect for that old knowledge, and that's something that perhaps we should try and resurrect in some ways. There was a view expressed that some of the views from the scientists on the panel were perhaps a little bit tempered, and that there may be a more we may be closer to the apocalypse than is currently sort of thinking, and therefore being able to go back to living in a more simple way might be something that we could have to do, whether we like it or not. And again, that brought into the dimension of really trying to understand and how to enhance and maintain our relationships with the earth that we live on, that is going to be very important to us. We did, as we were discussing this, again, there was a little bit of a sense of sort of depression. I think Mac mentioned it in his group that, this was a sort of potentially depressing type of discussion. But then we were reminded about some of the core values that we as Christians should be believing in, including faith, hope, and love. And, messages of hope that change can happen is something, again, that perhaps we can build on, starting small and sort of truly trying to capture that as one of the things that we as a Christian community at a local level can do that can begin to make change. And so, that was really where we ended, that sort of getting back to some of those core Christian values is something that we probably should try to encourage more, and particularly that sort of message of hope that things can be done, attitudes can change, and that's what we should be aiming for.
Quite an intriguing mix, just listening to those responses, between this sense that actually perhaps you're not being as dramatic as the situation really is. Maybe it's worse than what you're saying, and yet this longing in us for something positive, for an answer from somewhere. And interesting critique of what they heard. So perhaps I'll just go along, maybe start at the far end this time, just give people a little bit of warning. Rather than me putting a particular question to you, just what's your response to that? Both the sense that we're in a crisis that's maybe worse than you're saying, but also the sense that all of this sounds a bit bleak and we're needing hope. Just maybe starting with Alex, how would you respond to that?
Yes, well, I was delighted to hear David's group started off by being pessimistic, finished up by being full of faith, hope, and love. Because really, that is something that I think we should find encouragement in, that at the end of the day, we do have a gospel which talks about human nature not being determinative, that it can indeed be opened out and changed. And that's I think, really very, very important indeed. But at the same time, it is a question of many different levels. We can't say that one thing is going to change everything, because, I mean, clearly it isn't. There's got to be, somebody else mentioned the problems, for example, of the anti-climate change lobby in the United States. This is an issue of power again. And without addressing that, we're not going to get anywhere. And we've so many groups that have clung on to power, whether it's economic power, political power, religious power, there has to be a re-education there of how people behave. But I am optimistic, and I don't think for one minute we should be pessimists. We're given situations in life that we have to respond to in faith and with hope. And we have a gospel that has hope at its very core.
Thank you. Guillermo.
One of the tasks I have as responsible for this program in the World Council of Churches is to attend the UN conferences on climate change every year. No? And I've been there for 8-10 years. At the end of each conference, I say, I will not come to the next one. It's so hopeless. But I continue working and I continue coming. And sometimes at these conferences and elsewhere, there is this question, what do faith communities bring to this discussion on climate change? Is there any specific contribution? And I think from the Christian perspective, this is the message of hope. This doesn't mean that we can deny the reality. And when we look at the reality, I understand we are pessimistic. But then if you make this shift because of the gospel, you need to have hope. And then looking at what, especially because I don't have hope when I go to the UN conferences, but when you go to the communities on the ground and you see how they're struggling, how they're building resilience in trying to address some of this destruction, this is where you feel energized. The last conference last year was in Lima. No, I was at the COP, but I was also with youth from the churches. And when we were talking about these radical solutions, it was so inspiring to hear the youth talking about revolution, the system change in order to respond to making the links between economy and ecology. So I think from the community, we can have this hope in order to continue, even when we look at the situation, at the reality, and we must recognize that it's a very difficult situation.
Thank you, Cornus.
Thank you. Maybe just 3 points. I agree with the emphasis put earlier on the spirit of focusing on solutions, as we found in the engineering profession. I think that's key, the type of innovations that engineering will continue to come up with. Secondly, I think I mean, you can think in terms of what needs to happen upstream and downstream, let's say the supply side and the demand side. And on the supply side, that role of engineering is key. But on downstream, on the demand side, a key message for me, I think of us as individual consumers, is that message that I think the reverends would like, practice what you preach. And that means as a congregation, you know, when we support a church project in Malawi, do we think about a technological solution that goes with it, maybe installing a solar panel at a local church, but also think about environmental education at a local school, these types of options. Or ultimately in our events, the small actions that accumulate to big impacts, the willingness to use local systems of reducing or recycling waste or use of public transport. These practical actions of us as consumers and individual members of the church, I think that way of practicing what we preach is fundamental at the end of the day. Also, as all of us who have pensions and pension funds, we need to put pressure on pension funds to send a signal to the market in terms of what is done with investment. There's a big discussion about the role of investors in moving the finance community to invest in alternative technologies and to think more long-term. But that starts with us as individual citizens realizing the responsibility we have also as pension holders. And finally, the third point for me is critical, and this has come up, is simply that of education. I think it's fine to raise the issue of justice, but what is an informed discussion about justice? Because an ill-informed discussion about justice and framing it as a power struggle could easily backfire and become a very emotional throwing of mud. What happened in the case of the Montreal Protocol and ozone, the fact that we did find a solution and that potentially by 2050 the ozone hole over the South Pole may be recovered, is the fact that there was an engineering solution offered by some companies, and governments introduced an agreement that said we introduce the alternative in a phased approach, and we have a 10-year grace period for less strong economies from the developing world. So there was that collective action and an agreement, not a mud throwing, but an informed decision and a collective decision making that brought us to a solution and rolling out an engineering solution. So ultimately, I think, when we look at justice and related to that, the question of trust, key is going to be what we do and accomplish through education, starting at schools, the curricula we offer at universities, etc., but also through our church, in how far education of sound use and sustainable use of resources and the custodianship of the stewardship of our planetary resources, how we deal with that from a religious, from a church point of view.
Arthur.
Can I start with one little point, not to get it out of the way, but I pick on my feeling it was on Eric, who, the question of data. Excuse me if I keep referring to why I'm wearing this tie and where I'm going tomorrow, but in a couple of days I will be speaking on the question of data, because the scientific community, the hydrological and meteorological community, is suffering from not only a lack of data, because it's not exciting to go and collect data. You collect it, you store it, you analyze it. It's a very expensive business. One rain gauge is not just the cost of the gauge. It's thousands and thousands of dollars year after year to collect that data and keep it. But without it, you do not know what the rainfall is. And then often there are national protocols which say, and I'm being explicit because it's publicly known, the British left a lot of things behind in India. And one of the things they left in India was the fact that the government shall know and its data and information shall be confidential. So in India, it is illegal to distribute information that is held by government authorities. The Indians have a meteorological satellite. They will give you the products of their forecast and analysis from it, but they will not allow anybody to access the data. So as a result, WMO does not recognize their satellite as being part of the global system. They have data upstream, but there are all sorts of problems about releasing that information to Bangladesh downstream. The net result is the floods are not forecast as well as they might be. But you also have it in the Western world, where data and information is collected and held privately by private companies, by institutions which consider it their own private property. And by the way, the World Intellectual Property Organization doesn't necessarily help, because it likes to give these such things identities and private ownership. So there is a big debate about this question of data, and without that free exchange of data, we're coming up now to the free exchange of climate and climate-related data. And climate-related is a very broad subject. It'll be interesting to see what the debate will be on. Anyway, that's a separate thing, but it is a critical one, because it's back to actually knowing where we are and where we're going. And people keep data, therefore they keep information, therefore they keep knowledge, therefore they feel they have power. And they're removing, making other people powerless because they don't have the data. The apocalyptic bit. I'm sure if I went through this report and quoted out of context and an unbalanced view, I could give you a very pessimistic view for the future. One of the things is people talk about, let's try and stop climate change. So let's stop today doing no more greenhouse. The system already has a colossal momentum. There's nothing we can do now which will change what will happen in our lifetimes. We have to be thinking of our children and grandchildren. So therefore you do nothing. Well, no, you are condemning your grandchildren to a terrible future. But there is a momentum, and you can become terribly depressed by it, as we say. And the scientific community is very cautious what it says. But if it was less cautious, it really would be painting a black picture. And what worries me about that is that sort of picture, if it's painted too much and you have the revolutionary response, revolutions have not traditionally turned out very well. They have great bursts of energy to change things, and what comes after is very often worse than what went before. Revolutions often lead to dictatorships in the rather broad sense. Certain power groups can get hold of this energy and this enthusiasm and divert it into unacceptable directions. So we must be careful how we talk about the dangers ahead and how we capture the enthusiasm for change. And that brings me to the question of engineering. I'm proud to be an engineer, so I'm pleased that there is some people see engineering as a possible solution. It is a contribution to a solution. And I heard whispers here, and I'm quite right. The engineers take the science and apply it. So if there was not the science to know how we could overcome the problems with the ozone, then the engineers didn't have the basis on which they could find a solution. And that is the important thing. The engineers depend on the science, but the engineers also work according to some plan or some request or some policy. They don't just go off and do it on their own. They're certainly not a bunch of robots. So who is going to produce that policy? The engineers, for example, as you say, in the ozone challenge, there was found solutions because they knew what they were up against. They found a solution, and once they could show that the solution was there and it would work, then you could get an international agreement. With climate change, it's so much broader and so much more complex that it's very difficult to put down solution A, B, C, D. Would you like to tick the one you want? But if you can tick one and find one, then the engineers will come in with enthusiasm to try and make it operational. But what solution and what costs economically and socially and politically? So yes, have confidence in the engineering profession, but make sure you point them in the right direction and you control what they do, because you can do an awful lot of harm. I mean, electric cars, for example, you look at that 20 years ago. Suddenly people said never, 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 no. And suddenly now, because government policies demand it, yes, it was always potentially there if only the liberty was given for them to develop them and realize that there was a market. So see the engineers as a contribution. But fundamentally, we have to decide what sort of solution do we want and why are we supporting it.
Thank you. I'm going to draw the meeting to a close because we're running a bit later than usual. So Felix has something that he has to contribute at this point. So I will pause momentarily to allow him to do that.
Well, on behalf of the people in the pews out there, I would like to thank you for organizing these conferences. What did we get out of them as an audience? Well, first of all, now we know what ministers do when they are not in the pulpit. They are organizing such marvelous occasions such as we had. For that, I would like to thank you very much. I'm sure it was more than just a few words here and there. But what did we get out of all this? Apart from the subjects we have discussed, I think it gave us an opportunity to discuss a wide range of subjects, which we could have never done in our churches because he's the only one who can speak and we can't talk. But here we could. And we had a marvelous 4 evenings of discussion, which were very useful, very helpful. They covered a wide range of subjects outside the set out agenda that we had. And I think personally, and I'm sure that I'm talking on behalf of many of you here, it was a very, very happy occasion for all of us. And I'd like to thank you very much for that, Ian. Organizer and St. Andrews.
Much as I would like to accept that and have that put on record, of course, I'm duty-bound to say there was a planning group who brought this together, and I'm just the person who sits there, because if I wasn't chairing it, I would have to have given my own opinions, and that's, you know, much more work. So I'm drawing this evening to a close, which you've done beautifully for us. I do want to thank each of you tonight for the time you've given to preparing and coming and sharing. I hope it hasn't been too much of an ordeal. Couple more things to say at the end. First of all, there is some material which various people have brought at the tables for you to browse or take away or
browse.
You can take away.
Only today they're free.
Today only they're free, but Arthur will watch his stuff and make sure. Yes, let's. Don't take anything without checking. I think that's probably the safest way. The other question we have in mind, and rather than a discussion here, perhaps you can approach one of those who've been leading the groups tonight, Eric or Mac or one of our two Davids or Arthur. It's been basically the planning group for all of these meetings. We want to know what we want to do next about this, because we don't just want this to be a one-off, or we talked about these issues once. That was interesting. But just to say there will be, out of all of these words, somehow or other, we're talking about how we can produce material which might be used, perhaps for other groups who've not been able to be here, to reflect on these things and to have their own discussions. That will be a bit of work, and we need to talk about exactly how we do that over the summer, presumably. But we would like, in the ongoing life, at least of our congregation, and of course we open that up to anyone who's interested, to continue these conversations. And we've heard tonight issues, but perhaps the suggestion that churches ought to be modelling the kind of change that we are saying we need to have, and what does that mean for us in practice, and how can we share those kind of educative conversations, and how can we move towards a more just way of living? All of these questions are not just one-off discussions. This is a lifestyle thing, and this is a faith thing. Come to us, share your thoughts. Would you be interested in just gathering over food or a couple of glasses to have further conversations? Would you be interested in something more structured? The way forward is open, but we are interested in being part of a bigger group and continuing the movement of people who are interested in these questions. Not only, of course, environment and climate change, but the whole issue of how we interact with scientific change and faith and what these things look like. I've personally been delighted that you've come along, because we would have felt silly if there was no one sitting on this side, so thank you very much for that. And with the way this has gone, and I hope this is the beginning of something we can take forward together. So thank you to one and all. Thank you.